This is Richard Epcar, voice of Bot-To and Ghost in the Shell, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and we've got an episode about villains for you tonight. And with me, as always...
Hi, I'm the villain. I mean, Tech.
No, you're right. And our often co-host...
Hi, it's me, Jason. I'm Jin's villain. She's not here.
And our original co-host...
Well, under a different name, I am now Sonorous Vox.
The OG villain.
OG villain.
OG villain.
Indeed.
So we're going to be talking about villains. Now, we've done a favorite villains episode before. It was a lot of fun. It's really worth listening to. But we're going to be talking about our favorite villains, and we're going to do top five. No more than five, Jason. And we're going to be talking about our favorite five villains of media that we've been consuming recently. So let's think the last 6 months to year and just go from there.
Oh, then since I'm somehow strategically positioned to be prepared for this episode, I'm going to just go right off the bat. And I'm going to start with a softball, a sweet one, a nice one, not too serious. My main man, Biff Tannen.
Mm. Ooh.
Good choice.
Good choice.
You can't skate on water unless you got power. He's just...
What are you, chicken?
Oh, he's everything a stereotypical villain of a high school drama is, and it's great.
And apparently the nicest guy in Hollywood, everybody's best friend.
Like, it's just great. And because I went back and actually was watching the Back to the Future movies, because I love those movies. It's a fun trilogy. I love Doc Brown. I love Michael J. Fox. Like, you just...
Did that second one hit a little close to the chest with recent news there, Jason?
A little bit. A little bit. I'll take a Biff over what we already have. Anyway. and I will give Biff this level of villainy over a lot of villains. He changed time with his villainy. He literally changed the time, space-time continuum.
He did.
With his villainy.
Like, so did Kefka in Final Fantasy VI. Did he make your list?
Oh. No.
Let's keep in mind, only Final Fantasy villain to actually do what he says and blow up the world.
He succeeded. To be fair, he succeeded. Sephiroth came close, but no cigar, Haas.
Sephiroth was still a bigger villain for the one single act.
Yeah, he literally scarred an entire generation of nerds.
There is an entire generation of nerds. There's an entire generation of nerds who have never finished that game because their hearts were destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Tifa versus Aerith. Is it top 10 reasons why Tifa's better than Aerith? Number one, Tifa didn't die.
Yeah, man. Also, he had the futuristic Michael Jackson jacket at one point.
So,
with the shoulder pads.
Oh yeah.
I hate to tip my hand on what I'm gonna say for one of mine, but you mentioning Biff Tannen kind of brings into one of my favorite things with villainy is that I like looking at the heroes that were actually villains, because Marty McFly wasn't exactly the greatest of people.
No,
he's a bit of the villain of his own series.
That's a whole other episode.
He's a bit of the villain of his own series, but yeah,
that's going to bring up one of the shows that I want to talk about too. So
Biff is absolutely wonderful though, as far as villains go, because Biff is everybody's bully personified. Mm-hmm. Biff is the sneering, privileged,
really wishes it was Biff,
beefy jerk that is in everybody's life, and it doesn't matter who you are. Everybody has a Biff Tannen. Everybody has an obnoxious, foul person who has all...
Except he got beat up, but he got punched out by the dude that played Willard. Guess what? I wish all my villains had that much of a glass jaw. I wish when I hit that guy in high school across the head, I hope he crumpled too. No, dude. No, I needed stitches.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing is there. He's the wish fulfillment villain as well in that way, right?
Yeah.
So it's wondering, like, yeah, Biff is definitely also understandable, because you know, if I found a sports almanac from the future,
I'm the next Jeff Bezos.
I would sure be. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, too. I probably would be the next Jeff Bezos because I'd be launching random rockets into the sky to make up for the fact that I'm a horrible human being. So,
you meant Elon.
Elon.
No.
Terrible.
Elon is doing the same thing because he is a space alien and he's trying to get home.
Man, if there is a person on Earth who deserves to have like their corporate headquarters in a hollowed out skull volcano, it is Elon Musk. He's a human Bond villain.
Oh no, he's classier than that. He would have it in a hollowed out version of his own smiling face.
There you go.
He would carve his face into Mount Rushmore. And then put his headquarters in there.
That is now Mount Muskmore.
So moving away from like actual villains and back into fictional villains.
Yeah.
Tech, who's your number five? Or we don't have to do them in order.
Okay, I've only got three.
Okay.
But I guess so. My soft one, my easy one that I'm going to go is not a character, but it is a character actor known for playing villains because they're all my favorite. And it's Tress McNeil.
Yes.
If you need a witch, a crone, or just Principal Skinner's mom, you hire one actress. You hire Tress McNeil. She's been working since the early 80s. There is a show that you've watched that had her voice in it, and you didn't know. She's got hundreds of credits.
And there are five shows that you've watched in this week that she did the voice of a villain for. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean
Tress McNeil is in everything, and everything she does is gold because she is an amazing actor. The control of her voice, her evil laugh. This is Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company in Futurama. This is Agnes Skinner from The Simpsons.
Dot Warner,
Sneezy Squirrel.
Say again?
I was going to say, she's Ed O'Neill's nightmare.
Yeah.
She is, and the nicest person on the planet, of course. But I think that's what it takes to play a good villain, is you have to be at your core a nice person. A jerk who goes on to try to play a jerk on screen doesn't do it. I don't think they do it well.
Well, and I think that's like the whole story we've heard about Biff Tan and the guy that played Wayne in The Wonder Years and what's his name who plays Johnny from...
Oh, the woman with the blonde curls who played the antagonist on Little House in the Prairie.
All of these people are everybody's best friend.
Oh, yeah.
So that is definitely a known quantity.
I mean, she got slapped in public.
Yeah. I know that the guy that played Wayne, everybody was always like, oh man, I hated you.
I mean, like it's the mark of a good actor or actress playing a villain that you kind of get that inclination that you hate them. Like there was a point in time where if I met the kid who played Joffrey in Game of Thrones, I would have slapped him just for the satisfaction of being able to live.
That is another one.
That was a very good portrayal of Joffrey. I hated him instantly. Yeah.
And the poor kid left Malfoy. Yeah, Tom Felton apparently is like the nicest guy, and they had to give him a nice redemption arc in The Flash.
That's the thing is, I hated the kid who played Joffrey so much that when he shows up in The Batman Begins, I want a Batman to hit him with the spyglass instead of give it to him.
What do we know about the kid that played Draco? Is he
Tom Felton? Yeah, that's who we were talking about.
Oh, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he actually has a pretty fun role in The Flash. He
really?
Shows up in The Flash, yeah, and gets like this really great redemptive arc.
Does he tell his father?
No, he doesn't. He's not annoying in that way at all. He's annoying in different ways, mostly because The Flash is on CW.
So
they're annoying for other reasons.
Exactly.
Oh, CW, how much I don't
like
you.
But no, actually, I really enjoy him, and for a good portion of the episodes that I was watching him on, I'm like, who is this guy with these beautiful eyes? Because he kind of started losing his hair as he aged, and he was less pretty, but his eyes were still just absolutely gorgeous. And then but his character has this really beautiful arc, and it's really nice. We've got in the chat, by the way, since you were talking about Elon Musk, Drake in Venom is pretty much Elon Musk. So what do we think of him as a villain?
Yeah, he was, I hate using the term discount but he was kind of discount Elon Musk. Like, yeah, it's a commonly used thing for a lot of people to say this person is discount so and so.
Wait, was it Venom the villain in that piece?
No.
Venom's the hero.
He saved that bodega.
Yeah.
With a decapitation.
I mean,
what's the name of the symbiote that infects Drake though? That's
Riot.
The
Riot.
Riot. Yes. Riot.
So Drake.
Where do I get Carnage? When do I get my red and black symbiote? Come on, Carnage.
Yeah, that's the thing is Drake was not exactly a great villain because he was forgettable. He was too much of a take on Elon Musk to have his own characteristics beyond I have badly CGI'd drones to attack you with. What was he?
That was a fun movie.
It was fun.
I enjoyed that way too much.
Yeah. But the CGI was kind of hokey for its era. But anyway.
Wow.
Better than it has
I'm not too keen on him as a villain.
How many X-Men movie did we see and I didn't get to see swarms of giant purple sentinels? I mean,
yeah, the closest we got with
giant purple sentinels, best villain. No.
with Trask proposing the sentinels be a thing. That's the closest we got.
We got them in Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Well, you got the weird future ones that weren't the purple sentinels. Yeah. Okay. So we've had a couple. Can I put one forward?
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm going to lead with one that relates to something we've talked about. For those that are on Twitch now, but for those that haven't seen it, we've talked about Black Lightning a bit today, just a bit. Lala from Black Lightning, the tattooed man.
Yes,
A man that starts off already strong, being a gang leader who, despite being a gang leader, at least is trying to do right by his community in his own gangster way.
And they give him a powerful scene in the beginning of the show with the kid.
Oh yeah, it starts off very powerfully where he's trying to educate this kid and he talks to him about responsibility and about school and about all of these things. But then he shows how much of an utter heel he is by smacking the kid.
So
and you know,
can I get the abridged wiki stub version of why this super powerful amazing villain has a stupid name like Lala?
Because his name is Latavius.
Yeah.
And they call him Lala.
His street name is Lala.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So Lala goes from being a ganger who is working for Tobias Whale, the bigger villain of the series, and being kind of, he's not one note, but he's very kind of, he's a man of the streets and a man of the people he wants to be, but he's also a murderer to, being this very nuanced and very introspective character who, you know, he experiences some things, mainly some not living, and then he has to face his victims. And it's not that he faced his victims that made him a powerful villain towards the end or a powerful character towards the end. It's that he saw them, he grappled with them, and then he became something more because of it.
And we didn't talk about it when we recorded about Black Lightning earlier, but that whole thing with him and Lazarus, when Lazarus tells him, you keep looking and through these troubles, you'll find your answer and you'll become stronger for it.
Mm-hmm. So really, he's still, at the end of the day, he's still a gangster. He's still the bad guy, but he's a bad guy that you can actually kind of go, okay, I'm cheering for him in this moment. And I like villains like that. I do. So he's my number five.
Oh, I don't know if you saw this, Nettie, but in the chat, T-Goblin brings up the man, the smoothness, Cottonmouth.
Yes, that's right. Cottonmouth. I think.
Okay. So just for the record, before we carry on, how many of our best villains are going to be from Defenders shows? Like freaking all of them.
None of
one.
Them.
For me.
My oh, number one.
None of them for me, simply because I have not consumed any of the Defenders shows in the last year. So I'm not going to count it, but Cottonmouth is amazing.
I finished them just last year. So, I mean, they're recent enough in my memory, but yeah.
So let's go with I was thinking, because we kept talking about Elon Musk, that Daniel Barton character from the 12th season of Doctor Who is pretty much another clone of his, only he's American. But then it reminded me of the best villain from season 12 of Doctor Who, and that is the Master. The best Master that I have seen in New Who.
Wait, what is, isn't it the guy from The Great?
Yes, the guy that plays Arlo in The Great plays the Master, and he, and I'm sorry, spoiler alert, spoilers, because you're not supposed to know it's him, but he's amazing as the Master, and it is, oh, you finally, after that Missy Master nonsense, which could have, there were times when it was okay, but a lot of times it really kind of just bothered me. It grated on my nerves, but this master made sense to me. And I like a villain that knows they're a villain sometimes. You know, we talk about how every great villain is the hero in their own story, but sometimes it's good to have a villain that knows that they're a villain and is still well-rounded. And that is the Master.
See, I like that you brought this up because it's circling back around to me. Yes. because that ties in with my next CSM himself, the cigarette smoking man.
Oh, wait, you've watched X-Files recently?
I own most of X-Files.
Okay. Okay. And you've
just called them
Sex Files. Yes.
Yeah, you just called it the Sex Files?
Maybe. I've been watching a lot of late night HBO.
I mean, Gillian Anderson is
in them shoulder pads.
No, there's a photo op they did from some early X-Files stuff where she's with a young cigarette smoking man and she's got a V-cut that will make Black Lightning jealous.
Ooh.
But no, cigarette smoking man, because he is a villain who knows he's a villain. Mm-hmm. And he embodies it. He's the Odell before Odell existed.
Cigarette smoking man definitely knows he's a villain. He is fantastic and possibly one of the best things from that show. You don't have to have watched The X-Files, but as long as you are alive and over 5 years old in the 90s, you know who the cigarette smoking man is.
Yeah, there's another character from that show that you'll know, but I won't say his name because that name is vaguely troublesome.
Yeah.
They need to change that name. But no, man, Cigarette Smoking Man, iconic is all get out, man. Mm. Like, that. Just, if you're an X-Files fan, then you know what I'm talking about here. He is a symbol of all that Mulder has had to go through in that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That actor actually got speaking tours. During and after filming that show, he would just go around and talk to businesses and go to conferences and conventions and just talk in character as the CSM.
Wait, was he ASMR before ASMR?
No, that was Bob Ross. Who, by the way, was the villain of cable access TV.
Was he now?
He stole all of our hearts.
All right. Yeah. There's no mistakes, guys. Happy trees. No mistakes.
Well, apparently I've been corrected because T for Goblins doesn't know who the cigarette smoking man is.
In this fabled time of yore your parents may have talked about, there was a thing called the 90s. In the 90s, there was a little pokey cable show, cable channel called Fox. And before they filled it with hollering, obnoxious hooting and news programs, they used to run their own their own drama programs. Back before they would cancel them one season in, they had a show called X-Files that ran for what, 7 or 9?
9 seasons.
9 seasons.
And a movie.
Including Millennium, the spinoff.
And a movie.
And a movie and a revival. Let's
and the
not
smoking guns.
Revival.
And the smoking guns.
The lone gunman.
Lone gunman.
Yeah. So it had spinoff of Millennium, spinoff of the Lone Gunman, Morgan and Wong, and got to go off and make Space Above and Beyond,
which was amazing, and on Fox, and canceled in a season
because they wanted Morgan and Wong back on X Files, which is just insane. Yeah, no, X Files was huge.
I will say this of.
I know
gunman.
Of this Fox, but I heard it was just a rumor.
Oh no, my young friend.
The X-Files was such a cornerstone of Fox. They named the main character Fox.
Yes. Listen, did you see what Faye says where he's
yes,
like...
Yes, we're not talking about it.
So
I loved it.
Oh my.
We're not talking about it. Move on.
No.
Power through.
So what I was going to say about Fox, the greatest of the, you know, it's sad that, the Lone Gunman had so much potential, but they were ruined by the fact that they predicted one of the worst events to ever happen in America a week before it happened. They aired the episode, which some unfortunate, you know, 9/11 prediction tendencies there looked like. Yeah. So, yeah, the X-Files, not at all impactful upon the 90s culture. Not at all. I don't believe.
But I want to believe.
I see what you did there, Nelly.
So, Jason, you just did the cigarette smoking man. All right, now it is Tech's turn again.
Oh, God, he gets to go again?
Wait, Vox, you got to do your suggestion, right? Okay.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Yeah, making sure I'm doing this right.
Mine was Lala.
So I'm going to spin back to those Defenders shows, but I'm going to bring up one of my favorites with a bit of a preamble. What I love about a good villain...
Can I guess?
Huh?
I think my number one might be coming up.
I think I know who you're going to pick.
Who am I going to pick?
Boosh.
Nope. I love Bushmaster. I really do. I love almost all of the villains. Diamondback, I'm looking at you. I love almost all of the villains of the Defenders shows, because the great thing about the villains of Defenders is that they're the heroes of their own story. If you look at the story from their perspective, they're not doing anything wrong. It's just that guy across the street hates them. My bullies in school were not, you know, as much as I like to think so, they weren't sharpening their fingernails in the morning, singing an evil theme to themselves, going, how am I going to mess up Tech's life today? No. They just tried to say a joke. I didn't find it funny. I pushed back. They pushed back, and we hated each other. That's what makes a good villain. Mm-hmm. Is that they're just a person. There was a book I really loved high fantasy when I was in high school. I really wanted to read this book, Name and Author Redacted, to protect the innocent. And I finally get a copy of this. I got it from my sister for my birthday. I finally get a copy of the book in my hand, and I'm just reading the preamble to catch you up to the story. And they're like, oh, and then knight whatever met evil queen, blah, 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 blah. Wait, when the author describes his own character as evil queen blank, I tossed out 1,000 pages of fiction. I never read it. Why should I? If your character is so one note and one line that you describe your own character as a Voltron or Robotech level of villain.
Look, what you missed out of that whole thing is that she just had bad PR.
Yeah, exactly. She didn't have a public affairs wing to her castle.
Yeah.
Now, so what I will say, one of my favorite villains from Defenders that's going to make my list, because all the other ones are going to be talked by you guys, I have to bring up Harold Meacham from Iron Fist.
Ooh. Okay.
Because he is awesome.
Wait, are you talking about the dad?
No.
Okay, you mean Rand Meacham.
Yeah, brother.
Rand, Danny Rand.
I thought.
No, he's talking about Harold. He's talking about the brother.
The brother's name is Harold? Okay, yeah, my bad.
Harold Meacham. Yeah. The brother with the narcotics addiction.
Yes.
Which breaks my heart to watch him slam his hand in that car door.
Dude, he literally has the best characterization and development through the entirety of that. He is exceptionally written.
I cannot understand how a character can be that well written and that well acted. Meanwhile, we get the Knight of Frickin' Flowers, who can't even hold a proper fist in a show called Iron Fist! And he can't even make one! Why do we have such rolling dumpster fires of garbage for the heroes, but the villains on this show are guys like Harold Meacham, which are amazingly written, amazingly acted, break your heart, you totally feel for them, you don't root for them because you know they're the bad guy, but I think they should just go make, like, we talk about, you know, Daughters of the Dragon, they should make Daughters of the Dragon. No, screw that. Give me Black Mariah, Harold Meacham, Kingpin, Madam Gao, Bushmaster, everybody together, and, like, just the bad guys of New York show. I would watch that in a heartbeat.
good. You danced around my number one, so I'm happy.
They tried to do something similar in Jessica Jones with his sister. Spoilers for that show. But it doesn't work. She doesn't have the gravitas. She doesn't have the feels. We don't care about her as much as we do him by the end of that show.
Yeah.
When he's sitting in a dungy jungle bar with Danny Rand, he is absolutely exceptional. And his life is absolutely ruined. Ruined by Danny Rand's coming home. Absolutely ruined.
Yeah.
So it's Ward Meacham, by the way. I couldn't remember Ward. His name. Yeah. Harold is the dad, but Ward is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the Master is also in that show, too. Because in Iron Fist, the same actor plays Davos.
Wait, that's Davos?
Yes.
He looks really good bald. He should do that more often.
I know, yeah. Right?
Okay.
Davos was kind of a crap villain, but...
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with Ward, because Ward is... Ward's one of those, you know, he's one step from being able to be the best of allies, the best of heroes in that show. But, you know, he fell just a little short.
He's got his own priorities. He's got his own thing going on. Listen, and, you know, an opium addiction.
if they wrote Danny Rand half as good as him, that show would be is amazing.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, it's, yeah. That's the thing is Danny suffered from writing. But that's another issue entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess who's it bounced to now? Is it me?
Yeah, yes, go ahead, man. That's exactly who it is.
So my number four, I guess we're at right now, is, well, it's an oldie but a goodie. I'm going to go with Cobra Kai's Kreese.
All right. I don't have to mention that.
Did I steal one of yours?
No, that's fine. I had too many.
You're talking about the kid, not the coach.
No. We're talking about the coach. Joe Piscopo.
Now, see,
you mean the stand-up comedian that is Joe Piscopo? Yes. Google it. He's a stand-up comedian.
I'm aware of the name. I just didn't make the correlation.
Yeah.
So, no, that's not Joe Piscopo.
It's a different actor from the movie, right?
No.
Yeah.
Joe Piscopo.
It's the same guy. It's Martin Crowe.
Joe Piscopo is a stand-up comedian.
Yes, he is a stand-up comedian. Yes.
John Kreese is not played by Joe Piscopo. He's played by Martin Crowe.
Okay.
But anyway, Kreese, the Vietnam War veteran.
Maybe.
Was he, though?
Potential. Well, the questionably backgrounded Vietnam War veteran. Without getting into too much, because we're not going to get into spoiler country for anything here. The man who was the king of his own domain for so long, who had so much power over people, who lived his entire life around the image of being a kung fu martial or a karate badass, which I love the world of Cobra Kai for karate badass
taco.
He's the burrito anyway.
Yeah, so for being so John Kreese, for known for being his entire image is being a karate he's the guy who is pure machismo. He's pure potency and strength of being in my will is going to be imposed upon people is his entire being, and then you find he's not all that. He is his image is at least partially lies. That he's built himself up to be something he is not. It's very much it's an intriguing character to me because he's definitely
Continue.
He's definitely not. He's definitely not by any stretch of means the good guy. There's not much sympathy to be had there. But that's, I mean, it almost works more in there, and they explore his character a lot in Cobra Kai itself when he shows, so that's good. I could have gone with the irredeemable villain in Cobra Kai, I mean Hawk, but irredeemable, especially in Tech Size for one moment, and I agree, but I mean Cobra Kai is that there are a lot of people who could be the villain and who could be villainous, who could be heroic. There are people that go back and forth and everything, but Kreese is just Kreese. Kreese is the catalyst that is not good, even when he's pretending to be good. And that I like for that series very much so.
I'd like to skip the cue, Nutty, and get to the last one I have notes for.
Hang on one second. I do want to just say, I think the reason I always thought that Kreese was played by Joe Piscopo is because his character is played by Joe Piscopo in Sidekicks. Which is basically the Chuck Norris Karate Kid thing. And I have merged the two characters in my head.
I mean, there's a similar look.
I
not
need
really.
To watch, I need to watch Sidekicks and I need to watch Last Action Hero because I get those movies confused.
Yeah, they're very different movies.
Yeah.
So Tech, who is you're jumping the queue? Go right ahead.
You bring up Cobra Kai, you bring up Kreese.
Uh-huh.
I would like to bring up, as the last one I have notes for, every single person in Cobra Kai is a villain to someone else.
I agree.
What I love about this show is that there is no black and white. Everybody's gray. The fact that you took such a ridiculous villain from those stupid Karate Kid movies and made him into this hero slash anti-hero slash flawed person trying to do his best. But when you look at it from the other side, he's being a bit of a jerk. But is he really? Is he kind of good, kind of bad? Then you flip it back around. You go to Daniel's son. And is he that nice of a guy? Because he's kind of a jerk to his son for three seasons. And he's kind of a jerk to his wife, and he kind of ignores his daughter, and he's kind of trying to do his thing, but Daniel is he really that nice of a guy? And then the problem is the show suffers from horrible, horrible writing.
And by the way, we're saying this not having watched season 3.
No.
Yeah.
The show suffers from horrible writing because some of the decisions that the characters make are dumb on their face because they are badly written.
My thing is, I haven't watched any of Cobra Kai. But one of the things I think they should probably play up, if they don't, they're wrong, is the loss of Miyagi for Danny.
Oh, yeah, they do. Don't worry.
It is central to the plot in everything
Miyagi
we watch.
Miyagi is the only person who's not a villain in this show.
I'm gonna put forward one other person who's not a villain in that show
like
at all.
My thing is...
Carmen.
So,
yeah.
Miguel's mom is a saint.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the friend, the girl.
Abuela is not a villain.
Abuela is amazing.
Listen, if your name is Abuela, you can't be a villain, although the slipper, the switch, or the finger point.
Yeah.
But the daughter's best friend who joins Cobra Kai,
She's awesome, but she has her villainous moments.
Like,
She's a bit of a you know, now that I've got power, I'm going to be letting it go to my head character, not so much a villain. But it is very much a show where everybody's a villain. Because my first thing when I watched the first few episodes, I'm like, wow, it's great to see a show where, you know, Daniel is the villain.
Yeah,
he always was.
I went back and watched that movie recently, within the last year ish or so. I went back and watched that first movie because, you know, growing up as a bullied kid, that movie meant a lot to me because it was, you know, you can fight back against your bullies and things will work out okay. And then you go ahead and watch that movie, and it's like Daniel's son picked every single one of those fights.
He did.
Yep.
So at the Halloween party, he was there and he kind of muscled in on your girl. Did you need to throw the hose over the bathroom stall and hose the leader guy of the bad guy gang down? Did you really need to do that in a costume you can't run in? No, you didn't need to, Daniel-san. You got your butt whooped. You kind of earned that one.
And the fact that you said he couldn't run in that costume. He could have got away. He seems like the type that would run away.
I will say this, Daniel-san, his early movie stuff was very much my senior year of high school, where I provoked all the bullies into attacking me.
Yeah. If you'd like to hear more, us go a little deeper into that concept of sometimes provoking bullies, go back in the feed and listen to our episode about Cobra Kai, the first two seasons.
This is why these villains are so good, is because, you know, what? I mean, Cobra Kai has been brought up a few times now because we like it that much because of that, right? Not the writing, you're right, the writing or the karate.
What? Oh God, the martial arts! Man, I haven't seen the worst part of that show is the martial arts because the writing's a close second. But I haven't seen martial arts that bad since I saw Danny Rand try to make a fist.
Listen. Ralph Macchio's character is kind of garbage. Except in Karate Kid 2. Because he is actually a victim of discrimination and racism.
Yeah, whatever. He's still a jerk.
So I believe it is yours now.
It is my turn. So we're gonna move on. Oh, boy. And speaking of bad martial arts, I'm going to go to something that I watched just yesterday and along with some friends introduced our good friend Shane to, and that is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. And my favorite villain is Paul Reubens' vampire from that movie. Talk about chewing the curtains. Every time he's on screen, his facial expressions are amazing. He's, again, a villain that knows he's a villain, and he's all for it. And he has the best scene in all of cinema history. Fight me. He has the best scene in all of cinema history.
Which scene would that be?
When he dies. Well, okay. You mean which of his death scenes? Which?
Yeah.
Okay, the entire duration of his death, which is multiple scenes. Yes, I agree.
I mean, is there not, like, Paul, is there not a moment where Paul Reubens was ever subtle on screen? I mean, the most, and this is going out there. The most subtle that Paul Reubens ever was on screen.
No, don't say it.
Was Mystery Men.
Oh, okay.
When he played because he was shy, he was quiet, and he wanted you to pull his finger.
I really thought you were going to go blue.
I may occasionally drop a word that I need to, that needs to be tacoed, but I'm not going to go blue on this talk. I'll go blue after we're done.
So, Jason, it comes back to you.
So I've done this. I've done CSM. This is going to be a bit problematic because of the actor, but he is one of the greatest villains ever put on celluloid. John Doe from Seven. Kevin Spacey's performance.
I was going to say the actor who continues to put a Christmas message out every year, proving that he's a real life villain.
Yeah.
That character in Seven is so disgusting, terrifying, emblematic of
Seven, the horror movie.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
The serial killer one.
Yes.
Some reason there's shows. There was a video game called Nine. There's a show called Sense8. There's a movie called Seven. I there's the Fantastic Four. I just wanted to make sure I was at the right place.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey's portrayal of a serial killer who makes his crimes representative of the seven deadly sins is exceptional. Even if the actor himself is a reprehensible, terrible trash bag.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like, Kaiser Soze.
I was going to say, Kaiser Soze is up there, too. Also, to continue on your mini rant there, Tech, there was also Six Underground.
Oh, God.
The villain of Six Underground being Michael Bay for Michael Baying up what could have been a good movie.
There's also
Lucky Number 11.
Triple Nine.
Oh, don't do that. Now, by the way, Six Underground, mm-hmm. I know as a song by a 90s band called the Sneaker Pimps.
Yeah.
Fantastic song. It was on the Saint soundtrack, which, by the way, for being an awful, awful movie.
It's a great soundtrack.
Amazing soundtrack.
And it's not that bad of a movie. It's just more mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Seven has a lot of sway with this podcast because me and Jin have a joke about what's in the box.
What's in the bag?
I like to think that they surprised them on that day with what was in the box, and then it was just like it was like you know, a smiling what? It was just somebody smiling and going.
I have been mainlining for the last 3 weeks of vacation. I've played over 110 hours of this thing called Cyberpunk 2077. We have to talk about my man, Johnny Silverhand.
We're going.
Yep.
Because that guy, oh my glob. Okay, for anybody who hasn't played Cyberpunk, no spoilers. You play a character named V. You can make V into anything you want. You have amazing power in character creation and in dialogue choice. The problem is, at the end of Act 1, you have a computer chip inserted in your head that has a 50-year-old dead terrorist on it named Johnny Silverhand, played by Keanu Reeves, which has all of the depth and breadth of a Keanu Reeves character that you would expect. Have you ever watched the John Wick movies and thought to yourself, this character has too much depth and too much acting range? Could they narrow it down a bit? And that's exactly what they do with Johnny freaking Silverhand.
I was going to say, have you wanted all the depth of Johnny Mnemonic and his love of $10,000
No. Is that $10,000? It's $1,200 a night.
$1,200 a night. Yeah, we're not going to say what, but yes.
If you don't know what we're talking about, kids, go look up a movie from the 90s with a monologue from John Wick.
Yes. Okay, so you have this guy stuck in your brain. He talks to you, and he's a jerk. And throughout this entire story, you're trying to, like, solve problems. You know, you're going up against gangs and villains. You're in this giant dystopic cyberpunk future. You're hacking things. You're shooting people in the head. You're beating people with swords. You're doing all kinds of stuff. And the whole time, you have Keanu Reeves in your ear, preventing you from doing things. Preventing you from doing other things, making fun of the decisions you make, teasing you, mocking you, bullying you. It's kind of like your inner monologue and that jerk from high school all rolled up into one with a cybernetic left arm and a really cool pistol who just sits in your brain and makes fun of you.
Does that make my V a villain? Because my V was cool, was chill with Johnny Silverhand the whole time. My V ended up dressing like Johnny Silverhand by the end of it, and just
I actually just unlocked an accomplishment for finding all of the pieces of Johnny's costume.
But
my V has always been antagonistic to Johnny. The problem is, in my first playthrough, I kind of fell in love with a character, and you can only romance that character if you are playing a feminine V. So I'm about to start my third playthrough, my fourth playthrough, yet again as feminine V, because I'm in love with this character and I can't pick any other romance options because it feels like cheating.
Yeah.
So, it's like all of my Mass Effect playthroughs, I romance Tally.
So,
Johnny. So Johnny gets in the way of your romancing this character.
No! Not just that. Johnny gets in the way of everything. He's the cross between your inner monologue and that bully jerk from high school. He just sits on your shoulders. You suck. I wouldn't say that. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. You know what? I'm at the point now, I don't even know who the true villain of the story is.
I agree, Spence. Garrus is my space boyfriend for life.
Garrus is my space boyfriend for life. Long live Garrus. I love that guy.
My two favorite romance options are Tally and Garrus. And, like, really, why would you want anyone else?
So
that'd make a sexy throuple.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So
that's for an After Dark talk, though.
Vox, who is your number three?
So this is a happy coincidence for me because I get to bring up two. It's a kind of a mini twofer here because I'm going to lump them both together because they're related villains to each other. But I'm not sure if I think we've discussed the familiarity with this show. But has anybody here heard of a lovely little show called Leverage?
I've heard of it. I have not watched it. Okay. And from the descriptions I have seen, it is perfect for you.
Yeah, so Leverage is, for those that aren't familiar with it, which I would assume is most everybody, a show about an ex-insurance adjuster who has a very deep problem with the company he was working for, who's offered a chance at revenge by leading a team of thieves to get to investigate a stolen set of documents, and things go on and they become a team together. Now, I love this show for many reasons, including probably one of my favorite quotes of the entire show that comes up fairly early and marks why Parker is love, and Parker is the sneak thief of the show. One of my favorite quotes by her is, "I once saw a horse kill a clown." I'm not going to provide context. I'm just going to say that's a wonderful thing about Parker. Watch the show. It's great. But one of the reoccurring villains of the series is... I have to bring this up. His name is Jim Sterling, who is an insurance investigator for the same company that the main character Nate used to work for. The same company that denied his son a life-saving surgery.
Pretty villainous.
And he brings up the fact that Nate fell apart after that as a failing of Nate's character. That shows you how lovely Jim is as an individual. By the way, Jim Sterling is played by someone that most everybody here will be familiar with. He's played by Mark Shepard, a.k.a. Badger from Firefly.
Wow. We love Mark Shepard.
He's in everything.
Oh, yes.
I think Mark Shepard's been in most of the shows we've mentioned tonight.
And this is the thing. Mark Shepard is one of those consummate villains.
Yep.
He is a man with a punchable face that you would love to also hang out with because he seems cool.
But isn't Nutty, am I thinking of the same guy that he's a second generation actor because his dad is also another consummate villain, but just a slightly older dapper gentleman.
Yeah, well, and they were both in the same episode of Doctor Who playing the same character.
Was it W. Morgan Shepherd?
Yes.
Yeah. So the thing is, this provides a twofer because later on when Jim is assembling his own counter group of villains or hero people, there's a counter group that pops up. I can't remember the character's name because I haven't got to that part again, but good old Will Wheaton shows up as a hacker extraordinaire / holy cow, is this man just a jerk. He's like, he's the kind of jerk that he was in Big Bang Theory, but before Big Bang Theory by far.
And
kind
of like the jerk that he was in
Star Trek.
What is it?
Will.
Felicia Day's thing. Do you want to date my avatar? The Guild.
In the Guild. So he is basically like, he's as good as the hacker in the show is, but a jerk. He takes glee in being the bad guy, and he's a bit campy. And I love them for it. So Leverage has some cool villains in it because they have a villain of the week, but the reoccurring villains are always real fun.
So when you started talking about Leverage, FaZe said, Will Wheaton's character in Leverage, I predict.
Yeah.
P. Goblin says, I love Leverage. And then as you're talking about the Mark Shepard's villain, FaZe says, Will Wheaton's the bad guy hacker in that show. Honorable mention as a villain. So,
and that's not the thing alone. FaZe, I agree. Like Will Wheaton for being a rather what seems to be a wonderful and nice guy.
Everyone I've ever talked to that had conversations with him, he's always been really nice. Apparently, he had no problem when we crashed his site all those years ago. I mean, it's really nice.
Also, in person was fantastic.
Yeah,
but
you didn't mention crashing his site though, right?
No. At that Baron point, he had literally lost his voice when we interacted because it was in a line at a con. But he still took the time to thank me for something I had done earlier that day, which was awesome.
What was my point about the Will Wheaton? Yeah, I think one of my favorite ranks is rants of his was back in the days of his live journal.
Yeah.
You remember those things?
Oh, yeah.
When he had this whole rant about how he wasn't allowed to play celebrity poker because he was deemed by the organizers to not be big enough. You know, and then he goes on this whole thing. It's like Tom Green went in and goes all in his first hand and walks away. So I made $5,000 for charity. I don't care. I don't even play poker. They asked me to do this. It's like, you'll let Tom Green just waste the opportunity, but you won't let me play because you know I'll win.
Sean Astin had to come to me so I could teach him to play poker so he could be on celebrity poker, but I can't be on celebrity.
So I'm not going to say what was said in chat by Facebook.
Yeah, no.
But I will say, there was also some very wonderful stories in the Will Wheaton awesome hour at the convention that I attended to that he was there, which was 90 minutes of him being just gleefully vulgar.
He is quite profane, and I think like a large percentage of his later roles have been wanting to play a jerk because he was, you know, the teen beat heartthrob of the 80s and the 90s. And he just lets it all out, and it feels to me that he only does roles when he wants to because he doesn't need to. And if you want to be a dad, he's got some good books on being a dad.
Yeah, he was comfortable in just being a dad for a while.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. The character he played was Colin Chaos Mason, which was, you know, such a jerk name for himself too, is I'm chaos.
So I am going to, I don't think that Mark Shepard was in this show, but he might show up next season. Who knows? It's not exactly sci-fi, but I'm going to say, you don't want to leave just yet, Tech. Okay. I thought you'd have a reaction. Peter the not so great from the great.
You mean Beast?
Yes, I mean Beast. Yes, I mean the War Boy. Yes, I mean everyone who's ever been awesome. The actor, what's his name? Nicholas Holt, I think. He's in everything. He's amazing. But as Peter the not so great, he is fantastic. I really thought that Tech was just going to say, huzzah. Again, he's a villain who I'm not sure he knows he is a villain. Like, I know he knows that people don't like certain things that he does, but he still expects them to adore him. He's kind of bought into his own thing, and he's a bit of a sociopath in the sense that, like, he doesn't quite understand why people can't just see past him torturing them one day and why they don't want to play games with him the next day. He's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've been ranting and saying, telling everybody how awesome this show is. It is Amazon Prime. Go give it a watch. It is fantastic. It has one season. They got greenlit for a second season. It is about, like, as they say, occasionally based on Marie Antoinette. Not Antoinette, sorry. Catherine the Great. Where did Marie Antoinette come from? I don't know. This ADD, let me tell you, it sometimes makes you say things you don't mean. So, yeah. He's fantastic, and he's another one of those actors that just plays great villains or just plays great roles altogether. Oh, also from Warm Bodies. Jason.
Back on that point, though.
Go ahead.
I would really like to watch done in the same style as The Great. If you wanted to do the story of the French Revolution and the story of Marie Antoinette, specifically to throw Les Misérables into everybody's faces and just sort of have fun with the whole thing. You could even call it spoilers. Marie dies at the end. I think that'd be great.
I think you could
have a lot of fun with that because there's... I'm tired of Les Mis. I'm tired of everybody doing Les Mis. There's another version of Les Mis that just came out now.
So I'm sorry, but no Les Mis will be better in my mind than the Saturday Night Live Lobster Diner. If you have never seen it before, look it up. Trust me, it's fantastic.
Nothing was funnier than a huge jacked man trying to sing in that modern take on Les Mis.
I thought he did all right. What are you talking about?
They didn't cast his voice where it needed to be.
Okay, but the man can sing. The man can sing. And I think he did a fine job.
In The Greatest Showman, he did a wonderful job.
Bring myself to watch that movie.
For me, Les Mis is always going to start with Pete Davidson ordering lobster in a diner because it's on the menu.
Can we just, like, go back to Venom and the lobster scene? Sorry. Anyway.
Brain. So my leverage villains there, that's my number three.
I know. And I went after you.
Oh, yeah.
It's now Jason's turn.
So yeah. I'm going to roll this die. Even is one, odd is another.
Jason's now at his final two and he's struggling.
Mm-hmm. I am.
Jason was concerned we shared a number one, but no.
And the die says we still shall share a number one.
No, I can appreciate your number one.
It rolled a five. So my number, I'm sorry, not a five, four, 14. Blah, God, I can't read. So my number 14 or my even number choice.
Number two.
My number two is Eric Killmonger.
Okay. I can see why it was a coin toss for that. Yeah.
Eric Killmonger was the first time I ever got to witness a black character on a screen that fought the hero I was supposed to be rooting for. And I said, I don't necessarily know I want to root against him.
Because he's right.
To be fair, Black Panther's fiance is right.
That too. She's also right. They're all right.
And let's be honest, every black person out there, every young black man understands that we knew Black Panther was wrong for going against his old lady from the jump street. We knew that. We want to say nothing. We want to ride with our man. We had him. We had his back. We knew he was wrong. We knew he was wrong. Mm. But no, Eric Killmonger, exceptionally, wonderfully written, wonderfully performed anti-hero slash villain, whatever you want to call him. He's just beyond most descriptions of what a villain should be.
And T for Goblins agrees. Mad props for Killmonger. I think Killmonger is a fantastic villain, because you do kind of agree with him the entire time. Well, not more than kind of, like, totally agree. He may not go about things exactly the way you want him to, but you don't get to choose how people go about things. And T'Challa ends up doing what he wanted.
That's what I think makes him the greatest villain outside of my number one, because he's the only villain I've ever seen in a superhero story that does not get erased by the superhero himself.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, he is immortalized by the superhero because the superhero takes up his cause.
Yeah. And that's a powerful impact.
And, you know, a big prop for that movie that I have to bring up, you know, as the martial artist nerd, I have to bring up this point again, that it is the only fight scene I can think of in a movie that was predominantly wrestling, not predominantly punches and spinny kicks in a Marvel action movie. Yeah. I mean,
Mbaku loses to a triangle choke.
Yeah. The idea that, because they always say wrestling's boring and you can't show wrestling in a movie because no one wants to watch, you know, people hugging, that you can't do, I should say grappling. I don't mean wrestling. Sorry, Vox. I know that you're a big, from the top rope.
Look. There's a problem with WWE wrestlers being cast in anything, which, you know, because they're always going to do their finishing move. Yeah. So wrestling is cheesy in there. And also, Yeah.
I meant grappling, the grappling arts.
Yeah, because wrestling is also the villain in Dark Angel, the unsung villain in Dark Angel, because performing a Hurricane Rana, which was contractually obliged to her, caused Lita to break her neck during that thing, which shortened her career by far. Anyway, true. Rant over.
True. But the thing is, as a student of a grappling art, the thing is, grappling arts are very, very subtle, and that doesn't show up on camera. So it speaks to actors, and it speaks to the directors. If you can film a grappling scene that, one, looks realistic, because it did, and shows heroes and villains tussling, and shows them at equal power levels, and you're able to propel your story forward without needing things like, you know, big punches and spinny kicks and props and special effects. It's just two dudes fighting in a waterfall.
Yeah.
Then that speaks to everybody in that scene being amazing.
Let's be honest. Chadwick Boseman and Winston Duke could have been rolling around in baby oil and flour, and we would have been wrapped in the screen regardless.
Look, what you dream of when the credits roll is all up to you, my friend.
No one's going to fault me.
So Faye says in the chat, in this pandemic time, who doesn't want to see people hugging?
Exactly. Who doesn't want a hug from Winston Duke?
I need the hugs, and then finish him. Hashtag Mortal Kombat.
Oh, Winston Duke.
Wait, doesn't he fight Michael B. Jordan in the waterfall?
No, he fights M'Baku first. And
yeah, first M'Baku, then Michael B. Jordan.
And we forget that M'Baku was going to slide them both off the waterfall.
Right.
Yeah. He was going to scoot them both off. And T'Challa says, please submit, your people need you.
Yeah.
And that's right. What it does. But Killmonger throws T'Challa off the cliff.
Yeet.
Because M'Baku is a better hero than anyone needs. Oh,
great.
Yeah.
Great. Now I want to go back and edit just and one. Edit the yeet sound effect into there as he goes, completely undercutting a powerful moment in that film.
But no, it wasn't Rickenback False Phase. No, it wasn't. It wasn't throwing a dude
it was
off that.
So
waterfall.
Much better than no. Rickenback Falls.
Oh no. Ugh. Why is it? Yeah. Okay. I have a side notion I'll talk about later. Not on.
So.
This, but anyway.
Vox.
Okay. I have actually just changed mine because I've got some honorable mentions, but we'll get to those before I go to number one.
I love
one.
The explanation and preambles all the time.
Yeah, this is me, right? So, I'm gonna
I'm Sonorous Vox.
You and Jason. All right.
I'm gonna say Moff Gideon. Did I steal your number one?
You took one of mine. That's okay. Juan Carlos Esposito is like amazing. Yes.
I want to look like him when I'm his age.
If you need a villain, just if you don't even need a like, you don't need any backstory for it. Just have him show up and speak wonderfully, wonderfully calm in evil words to
and
people.
Dangle a weird laser butcher knife in front of a like, small, adorable
it is
child.
Just so many you reasons.
You jerks made me watch a movie called Candyman a little while ago.
Oh!
No, wait, hold on. I'm not going to talk about that because I'm not bringing up a villain. I'm supporting here. This is...
Okay. But so, I just changed my mouth getting into somebody
so
else.
The entire time that I watched the beginning of when I watched the first few episodes of Mandalorian, I remember thinking, it's like, why didn't they get Tony Todd to play this guy? Who the heck is this Juan Carlo, whatever the heck kind of guy he is? I would much rather see this as Candyman and have like moth robes with like a fur collar and like a lightsaber rusty hook thing. I thought would be amazing. And then we get to that last pair of episodes of the last season, or the last episode, on the bridge of the Star Destroyer.
Mm-hmm. Slight spoilers for Mando.
The scenes on the bridge of the Star Destroyer, and I'll stop there, where all of a sudden, actor just comes into his own, and you start to realize that, you know, this whole, you know, the thing I've been talking about before, about how the villain is the hero of his own story, and the lengths that he goes to for self-preservation, and I'm like, okay, I know why they picked him to play this role.
Yeah.
You know, let's forget Tony Todd.
Like I said,
you're sparing my life.
Like I said, all you need. What was that?
You're sparing my life.
Yeah.
This is going to be interesting.
Yes, that line. Like he is. All you need is him to show up in any movie you need to punch up and have a better bad guy. Is him to show up looking good and speaking soft and evil words, and I'm going to love it because he's got gravitas.
He's an example of
a villain that is powerful because the actor is able to bring a gravitas to the villain. Moff Gideon, played by anybody else, would have sucked.
Except Tony Todd.
Maybe,
Tony Todd's his son.
It's like going back to one of Tex. It's like Johnny Silverhand, played by the rumored Nick Cage, would not have worked.
Oh gosh, no!
It would have been a different game. It would have been an entirely different game.
Jason, was there something that you were trying to say?
I would just say, like, that scene when he's dangling the darksaber in front of a certain somebody, and he's like, and he's just waving it back and forth. He doesn't have to say what he's going to do with it. He doesn't have to say.
You have to edit so many spoilers out.
They make a joke, by the way, in Cyberpunk about Johnny Silverhand being Southern. So if it's going to be Nick Cage, can it be Nick Cage putting on the voice that he put on in Con Air?
All right, moving on. That's a villain in its own.
Wait a minute. Why haven't we watched this for one of our Saturday get-togethers?
Con Air's my favorite movie.
It's like herding cats, people. So Faye said that Giancarlo Esposito in Breaking Bad is also a great honorable mention, by the way. And I think everybody likes Katie Sackhoff in a particular thing we were talking about, but I'm trying not to put spoilers out there. It's not even 6 months, people, which is hard when you're talking about villains that you've recently consumed.
I will say this about The Mandalorian, right? The internet ruined The Mandalorian for The Mandalorian. So
that's true. I will say, by the way, since we did spend over 2 hours talking about Black Lightning, one of the characters we did not talk about, the soldier from the pit, is Moff Gideon's on his bridge. She's she's constantly popping up, and you're like, "Who is that? Who is that?" Yeah, it's her. But
Okay.
Moving on.
So it'd be yours now.
It's yours now.
Yeah, it's mine now.
Can I have another one?
Absolutely. Okay. But the question is, do you have more than one?
No, I have one.
Okay, because I want to make sure that you're given ample time to talk.
Okay,
before we finish up.
So I will take my ample time. But, okay. So, sorry.
It's fine.
This is a quick one, and I'll go now, and I'll probably think of something else to add in later. But if Vox can bring up Leverage, I can bring up an old show that I also permanently have on repeat. What happens if you take a show, you make a situational comedy show about a bunch of friends that are in a stupid, ridiculous fantasy football league? But you make the show you cast the show around a bunch of really talented improv comics that have all gone on to have amazing careers. Paul Scheer, Nick Kroll, the rest of the cast. And you just have them just sort of like hover around each other in a half improvised show about a bunch of idiot friends pranking each other. The show is called The League. It ran for 5 seasons, I think, and it's about a bunch of friends in a fantasy football league that are constantly trying to undermine and undercut each other to gain an advantage in this league. It has nothing to do with football, American gridiron football, and you need to know nothing about American gridiron football to enjoy this show, because I am not that big of a football fan. I love everything about this show.
I like football even less, and I like this show.
And there is a reoccurring villain in this show that is only referred to as the brother-in-law.
El Cuñado.
El Cuñado.
You know that means the brother-in-law, right?
Yeah, stop trying to make it sound more sinister than it is.
Yeah, but it sounds sinister when you say it like that. El Cuñado.
El Cuñado, played by the great, amazing improv comic Jason Manzoukas. I love everything this guy does. This was, for me, his big breakout role.
Mm-hmm.
He came to my consciousness as the character of Rafi, the brother-in-law, on The League. And he is so good as a comic foil.
Mm-hmm.
That he's just this bumbling idiot who walks around and ruins all of your plans because he finds a toilet seat made of compressed cocaine, or he wants to film an adult movie in your apartment while you're gone
with Dirty Randy,
who's Seth Rogen.
Shows up finally when we meet Dirty Randy. Warning, he's kind of a jerk, and they finally meet him and it's Seth Rogen being a jerk. I mean,
yeah,
it was
if you want to fall in love with Jason Manzoukas, by the way, just get him talking about Gilmore Girls
or Harry Potter,
yeah,
or Lord of the Rings, or the guy is a massive nerd. He is the coolest dude on the planet. He is
he's not
cool, and that's what makes him cool, because he doesn't know he's cool. He's still cool, and he is the king of us geeks. He is an amazing improv comic, an amazing wit, and playing the role of a comic villain, I can't think of that makes all of the heroes of the story go, oh, not El Cuñado again. Ah, they hate this guy.
Yep.
And it's great.
So good.
And every time he's on your screen, you're super happy.
I mean, I will say, who hasn't found a toilet seat made of compressed cocaine before? Like that.
So I
follow and, that, Nutty.
Yeah, there's nothing to follow that. There's a reason why when I moderate, I have a flow and a direction. And Tech's like, no, I'm going to jump the queue. I'm going to jump the queue again. And then I have to follow that.
You may have ADD, but I have ADHD. Specifically, if you didn't know, the impulsive type. So
I could just do this and then I have more control, but the problem is he's in.
If you do this, I'll just talk louder.
He's in the same room.
This is the problem. This is the problem when you have a co-host who yells professionally.
Hi, he's Tech.
To face as you can't talk louder. That's impossible. Oh, trust me, it's possible.
Oh, so,
I mean, if I wanted to, I could probably talk loud enough. It would still pick up on your mic.
Listen, you haven't seen me and Tech at Balticon.
Oh boy,
at 1 a.m. in the morning.
So moving on.
Still on the number twos.
We're on number fours.
No. You.
Well, you're going in reverse order.
Oh though. Yeah. Number two. everything's just falling into chaos. I forgot I changed that. Okay, so
because underscore denominator carry the
borrowed Moff Gideon, right? So
yeah. Well, I. So
I mean, this is the risk because we all watch a lot of similar media.
We're gonna limit this to 5, so I'm gonna save these for lightning round, and I'm gonna say that it's a real hard toss up between Lady Eve and Gravedigger from Black Lightning for all the reasons that we loved it. And you can listen to the whole episode, because who doesn't want Wayne Brady as a villain or Jill Scott as a villain?
Now, having never seen the episodes, I have to say I vote for Gravedigger because we were warned what, 15 years yes. ago in that Chappelle Show sketch? We knew Wayne Brady could be a villain.
We did. Yes. We did. We
but
were
I am
warned.
Surprised he did not do what people said Wayne Brady.
Exactly.
Saddened by that.
he does.
I'm. Oh, well.
He not... chokes someone.
Oh, that's right. He does.
He chokes a lot of people. And every time he did, I heard Dave Chappelle and Wayne Brady in my head. And we're not going to go further than that.
Listen. The only people that want Wayne Brady in their ear is not having, is the people who don't have Lady Eve, Jill Scott, in their ear going, I'll fix that for you, babe.
Exactly.
Like I'm melting.
I just really want someone to, hi, Dave, I love your show. Run, girl, get some help.
So now Lady Eve and Gravedigger were both fantastic villains.
And I didn't choose Tobias because I figured Jason probably would. Plus, we spent like 20 minutes to 30 minutes on him.
Nope.
Okay.
So yeah, Jason and I are both going based on the fact that we've probably dipped back into a well of watching that you two haven't recently, because I've done some watching back and stuff. But
yeah,
and Jason, and I might know what Jason's number one is because you know, we wanted to make sure we.
I think we've all got
toes.
The same number one.
Oh no, mine's different.
It was a toss up for me.
Okay,
and I had to roll a die for it, and the die came out true.
Mm-hmm.
My number one, Black Mirai.
I predicted it.
She is absolutely exceptional. And if you want to see what that means, watch the mid-season finale of season one of Luke Cage with the mic stand.
The mic stand.
Yeah.
Perhaps one of the best, the best scene in all of the Defenders shows. Two, probably one of the best acting scenes I've ever seen on TV, full stop.
She's crushing.
No, she crushes it and something with that microphone stand.
Like, listen, I love Viola Davis as an actress, but I've never seen her do something like this. This scene when Cottonmouth...
That's not Viola Davis.
No. I know. No, that's what I'm saying. I know it's not. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think Viola Davis is one of the greatest black actresses of all time. And she can't hold a candle to this scene when Cottonmouth side mouths that Black Mariah wanted to be sexually assaulted.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to go there in the episode. We could just reference it without actually talking about it.
But here's the greatest thing about that whole scene is he only does it. He does it in such a casual throwaway line, and her reaction is so visceral, so finite, that it literally shapes the rest of the entire show. Like, it's wonderful. Like, her character, her personality, the development she goes through, the relationships she develops, like, it's all around that. And
it was even amazing writing, because it wasn't just the actress, the character of Black Mariah. When they go back in time and they do the whole scenes with Black Mariah and Mama, and you go through the early the birth of the character. Amazing stuff.
That's another woman I don't want to meet in a dark alley.
The Mama?
Yeah, I don't need
Hell
that.
No.
I don't need that.
Yeah.
Mama Mabel, I love her.
I don't need none of that smoke.
So, yeah. It seems both Jason and I have consumed some Defenders recently. At least for me, it's recently enough for my number one to also be from the Defenders. The reason, well, I'm not going to get into reasons why I've consumed Defenders lately, but I will say my number one for the simple fact that up until this performance, this was an affable and likable and wonderful actor who is probably someone I would love to meet. My number one is Kilgrave.
Ah, so that is fantastic. Yes, T for Goblins, I have it written down, was like, why is nobody talking about the Purple Man?
I had to hold that close to my vest because I saw that comment in chat. The Purple Man.
Horrifying.
David Tennant's casually dismissive, you're beneath me because I am better than you performance. The casual delivery of some of the most awful things that people have been made to do by a villain in such a way that it's like, yeah, I simply can get away with this because everybody always follows what I say.
And so I bet money the scene that shapes him for you is when he is facing Jessica Jones and he says, I don't know. I didn't know if my parents did things for me because they loved me or because I made them do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so there's some tragedy there. That's the thing is there's
a scene where you watch his powers grow, where he walks up to someone's apartment and it's a couple and he just completely takes control and you're watching basically a panic attack happen on screen.
Yep.
And you get to watch, you know, wonderful acting from these actors who are being controlled, who are in fear and terror and don't want to do these horrible things that Kilgrave is making them do. And you get to watch all of this and you get to watch David Tennant, perhaps the most lovable doctor of them all.
Yep.
Perhaps one of the sweethearts of the acting world that everybody fell in love with, his portrayal of absolutely everything. He is the nice boy who is now playing the worst villain of all time.
Imagine David Tennant's Crawley from Good Omens talking to Kilgrave and being like, dude, I'm a demon and you scare me. You are bad.
Again, we love David Tennant because we also remember this line. Oh, Wilford, you just had to be you, didn't you? Because he knocked four times. The David Tennant farewell when Wilford
goes
in and he looks at Wilford and you know he wants to leave. He wants to leave. He wants to go away. He does not want to face this. But because he's the character we love and who loves everyone, he takes that dude's place.
So for me, the Purple Man is Jessica Jones is my favorite of the Defenders standalone series because Jessica Jones is not a hero. She does not want to be a hero. She tried to be a hero at
Jessica once. Is a survivor.
That's right. Jessica tried to be a hero once, went, no, I am not this person I just want to be. And then she suffered trauma in the form of a man wearing a purple suit that is unimaginable.
Yeah.
And the show is about her surviving her PTSD from this. And he is her PTSD given speaking and suave form. And that's what makes him probably the most.
Get away from a villain with those powers.
And you don't.
And it's for a similar reason to why I like Moff Gideon. He's going to say the most evil and heinous things, but with such a gravitas, such a smoothness to his voice, such an affability that you almost for a second think he's not that. Oh no, he's a bad guy.
Have you ever made your parents so mad that they didn't yell at you and they're speaking very calmly and softly and the whole time you're quaking in your boots going, God, could you just please yell at me? That was much easier.
We didn't bring this up during Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Brady has the same power as
him. Oh yeah, he does. And it's that.
I lied. You brought it up.
Yeah.
Remember, I'm done with this. Kill her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing is it's also in with Gravedigger. It's a little bit more. It's played differently. He knows the power of what he's doing. With Kilgrave, there's also that childlike innocence about him, which is disturbing. It's like Damien from The Omen grown up and able to just do what he wants. It's that, you know, that kid that never had to grow up to a certain degree because he has everything he wants. He's given everything. And when he's finally confronted by it, then he starts lashing out and getting worse. And I love him.
So T for Goblins in the chat says scary and then lots of symbols. And then he being David Tennant made that role terrifying. Faye says not just Gravator, but panache.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is just absolutely amazing.
He was stylish. He was stylish. He was in your face evil, but in probably the best representation of that kind of evil that has ever been put to screen.
And for anybody that says that people only liked his doctor because they thought he was cute, I think his other roles have proved that it is his acting.
Yeah.
Because honestly, he's kind of funny looking.
If you look at a woman like Jessica Jones and you think of all of the powers that she has and the abilities and the privilege and the everything that makes Jessica Jones what she is, and you think, what would be the scariest thing to her. Mm-hmm. And you make a character like Kilgrave, and you make him the scary, what was Murder Corpse already taken? I love that zinger. You make a character like Kilgrave, and you make him the most horrifying thing to Jessica Jones and to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Because
and those shows, of all of our top fives, of the 20 that we picked, 13, I'm kidding, 13 were from Defenders.
I mean, but
because there's a reason. Those shows were written well, most of them.
Yeah. I mean, think about it, right? If you know the comics, you know Jessica Jones and Luke Cage get together and have a child. Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are together. They're a couple. And in that show, Kilgrave takes that from her.
Yep.
And it's, yeah.
So, I don't want to do another 2-hour episode, guys. Yeah, that's why I said five.
Yep, you're number one.
Number one, Nutty.
All right.
Number one.
So my number one, which I hadn't thought of, but I was reminded of, is the one and only Candyman. Because we did watch that recently.
Delightful coat.
Oh my God. I mean, Tony Todd in that coat and them bees and
them bees, yo.
Everything. I mean, talk about social commentary, everything about his character. I mean, you want to talk top villains? Oh, let's talk about top villains from Halloween or slasher movies. It's going to be Candyman, okay? It is the Candyman played by Tony Todd, and it is amazing. He is scary as all get out and sexy at the same time. How does that work? I don't know.
He wears a top hat in Hellfest.
Yes. And thanks to Tech never seeing it, we got to introduce it to him this year. And we recorded a thing on that, right? Is that out already, Jason?
Yes.
So where can people listen to that episode where we go further into Candyman?
So guys, you can find our episode from this year's Halloween Horror Fest, 31 Days, 31 Podcasts, where I torture my co-host Jen with semi-bad horror movies.
And Candyman.
at nerdswithvoices.com. You can also find the conversations we had about those movies in our Facebook group, Nerds with Voices. Because guys, remember, I keep it going because everyone has a voice, right?
Yeah. And so before we wrap this up, it's kind of a lightning round. It's mostly me collecting everything that was in the chat. Spence says from Food Wars, Asahi Saiba? Saiba? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Saiba.
It's a long ways back. You're not going
to
see it.
I'm going to scroll back to the house.
and I don't remember which character that is. And then also Don Juan from Jingle Jangle, which I only watched part of the first part of that, and I couldn't make it through. But Don Juan was amazing because he is a toy that was brought to life. And when he finds out that they're going to replicate him and make more of him, he's like, no, I am an individual. I can't make a copy of me. And he is fantastic.
What is this Jingle Jangle?
It's a Christmas thing on
Netflix. Okay, because all I think of is...
The drug from Riverdale.
Which is the worst name for a drug ever in a show.
It's so Riverdale.
You got that Jingle Jangle?
It's so Riverdale.
It sounds like Pixie Sticks. It sounds like they're just buying actual Pixie Sticks.
FaZe said Mr. Glass from Unbreakable.
Oh,
I knew it. I should have known it.
I've yet to watch the third one.
I should have known it.
I haven't watched any. I love Unbreakable. Evil Phil Coulson, which I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I know who Phil Coulson is, so I can imagine that would be a fun villain.
Clark Gregg would play a pretty fun villain, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Chonkers cat, Natoth, at 6 a.m.
I do have a couple of honorable
lightning
mentions.
Lightning
rounds? Yeah, honorable mention. Those degens from Upcountry.
You mean you and Tech?
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
we are the degens from Upcountry.
The degens from Upcountry, but Letterkenny's degens from Upcountry. They got to be on there. And because I watched all of Trek over the course of last year, Lore.
All right.
Will always remain my favorite Trek villain because
shout
Lore
out to the bathtub mermaid.
Okay, because I continuously watch Trek on a continual basis. It makes it legal. I have to bring up Dukat.
Yeah.
And and
Unforgivable.
I also have to bring up Ambassador Tomalak.
Yes,
Tomalak. Tomalak. Fair.
Tomalak was a great adversary for Picard. Great adversary.
And a great adversary for Londo Mollari.
And if you want panache, I mean, like Q, but let's not forget about the Dura sisters, right? Like, they were cool.
I mean, Trek had a lot of good villains.
Yeah.
I mean,
you. So I have to mention either Catra or Shadow Weaver from She-Ra. I'm not sure which one. Shadow Weaver is totes knowing that they're evil, whereas Catra is just like a hurt kitty. It's so hard.
Okay, so I haven't watched the full episode. I've only watched the snippets that you've forced me to watch at gunpoint, but they were great. I have to ask, is it okay for me to have a crush on Catra?
Yes, you want to. It's not okay if you don't have a crush on Catra.
Okay, because it's like it's getting close to the level of Judy Alvarez and Tali Vasnora Normandy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and I'm also completely in love with Princess Scorpia, but she's not a villain in any way.
So my lightning round character is one, because I've gone back and rewatched old Batman.
Lightning round means you just spit it out.
Danny DeVito's Penguin.
Okay.
He does not get enough love for that performance. He does not get enough love for revolutionizing that character at the point in time, taking it from a cartoon character to someone sinister and tender-hearted. And also, again, Batman characters or superhero characters that revitalize careers, the Vulture is tied with him.
Okay, the Vulture, I can agree with.
I have it written in my notes and I struck it off, but if you're going to bring up that, I have to bring up Mark Hamill's Joker as revitalizing villains and giving them new life.
Yes. See, the whole Danny DeVito thing as the Penguin is like me going, this is what you have to do when your guest brings up something that you're just like, what? How? But
Nutty?
Yeah.
Lightning round.
Lightning round, I'll CW'd up for a second. Sabrina from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
I still need to watch that, by the way.
No,
Cheetah,
you don't.
From Wonder Woman.
No, you don't.
No, trust me, you don't. I got through one season of that show and I just couldn't go on.
I'm on season four.
I've watched
now,
everything
and
but the latest awful. Season of Riverdale.
I
watched
Sabrina,
everything but the latest season of Riverdale and I can't watch Sabrina.
Nettie, I want you to know that you going, it's horrible, but I love it, is literally what I do to Jen every October.
It's such trash, but I'm still in for season four, and Sabrina is totes the villain. No, I was going to just say Cheetah from Wonder Woman, because I had fun with that.
And if I can go completely cartoony with my last choice for great villain.
Of course.
Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Oh, God.
Has always been a favorite villain of mine, because how do you take a German biathlete and turn him into a Soviet boxer and somehow make him into the scariest thing in the movie? I would break you. Because he uses computers with flashing lights and he's got this thing, and somehow we're going to put this little Italian dude in the woods and make him lift logs and he's going to beat all the Russians.
I mean, You got to give it that he's played by a man who's so intimidating that once somebody broke into his home, saw a picture of who owned the home and put everything back in place and then apologized for having done it because he had tied someone up in the process. Like, literally, look it up. It happened.
It happened.
That's funny.
You guys brought up villains. You brought up, you know,
Drago.
Then I'm going to bring up Clancy Brown's Lex Luthor.
I was going to say Clancy Brown's anything.
No. On my list, that's going to be on Nerds on Cinema. Clancy Brown is there, but it's not Lex Luthor, and it's probably his greatest role.
All right. So, yeah.
On that note, I want to thank everyone for joining us. This was fun. Who are some of your favorite villains of media that you're consuming recently?
Rita Repulsa from Power Rangers.
You watched the Power Rangers recently?
Go, go, Power Rangers.
So you can tell us in the Facebook group, or you can join our Discord. If you go to nimlast.org, you'll be able to find a link to the Discord. Or if you're in Twitch chat right now, just type !! Discord and you'll get the link. So thank you for joining us, everyone. People can find Jason at nerdswithvoices.com because you already gave us that plug, and we want to thank Vox for joining us yet again. Thank you so much, everyone. We'll see y'all later. Bye.
Listen to stories crafted to be perfectly sized for today's soundbite mindset. Join me and encounter myths and fairy tales from new perspectives. Walk with werewolves, visit with vampires, frolic with fairies, gab with ghosts, and yes, meet up with mermaids. This is Miss Meliss, the Bathtub Mermaid, inviting you to 2-time Parsec-nominated Tales from the Tub. Dive in at www.bathtubmermaid.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlast Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlast.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.